5047. And before I introduce Ms. Jones from LFO, I would like to welcome Kathy Mann, who's the interim director of the State Board of Psychologists Examiners, and Dr. Martin Wachter, who's the vice chair of the State Board of Psychologists Examiners. And just to reiterate for the committee members, as we had announced to us yesterday at the close of the meeting, both Ms. Mann and Dr. Wachter are quite new to this process and are not going to be able, I think, easily to answer a lot of in-depth questions. But I'm sure that if the committee has questions, they'll do the research that needs to be done to get the answers and get the information back to us. So I would just ask members to be considerate of the position that these two people find themselves in today and be nice.
Be nice.
turn down the roasting flame.
Yes. And with that, Ms. Jones, would you give us the LFO overview?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cindy Jones. In front of you, you'll see that I have my LFO analysis. Within that packet, there's information to go through, and at the very back, there's a audit report, and I'll be going down to get the second part of that but didn't get the double copy to. The Board of Psychologists Examiners recommended budget is a 10% increase over the 0103 legislatively approved budget. The Board's revenue is 100% other funds for the collection of fees, examinations, license, and miscellaneous fees. There were no budget notes from last session. However, there was a statement of expectation for the board to more thoroughly develop and track performance measures during the 0103 biennium. Again, I have the attached Secretary of State's audit for 2001. It was a change of director audit, and I will go get the second part of that audit. There were no interim reports or studies completed within the last 2 years, and the board is the Department of Administrative Services approved a fee decrease for the board during the current biennium.
Questions or comments for Ms. Jones?
Actually, yes.
Representative March.
Maybe this should probably be directed at Des, but I noticed that they have a backlog of complaints, and they're decreasing the fees rather than keeping the fees the same and maybe increasing the investigation hours.
Madam Chair, Representative March, I think that would be a better question for maybe Ms. Mann to answer. However, they did have a large operating balance, and they wanted to decrease that cash carryover that they had.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments from the committee members? What we'll do now is have Dr. Wachter and Ms. Mann and Adam Torgerson come on forward, and we'll step through the presentation that you have for the members of the committee. Welcome. Please begin when you're ready, and I just want to reiterate that if there is anything that we can do to help you get through this, which I think is probably way beyond both of your comfort zones, don't hesitate to talk to us about it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. My name is Kathy Mann, and I am the Administrative Assistant for the Board of Psychologist Examiners. I would like to introduce Dr. Martin Wachter. He is a psychologist from Eugene, currently serving as vice chair. Dr. Wachter has been a board member twice now, once in 95 and then appointed again in 2001, and we feel very lucky to have his history and experience back on the board. I would initially like to inform the subcommittee that the agency is in a unique situation. The board's former executive director resigned in December and was the person who prepared the budget. Because of the vacancy, I've been appointed by the board to serve in the capacity of acting administrator in the interim. The board is in the process of revising the director's position description, and it is anticipated the board will begin recruiting in March. The board will also have three seasoned board members. Terms expire at the end of June. for the recruitment of not only the director position but also the member vacancies, the office has contacted several advocacy commissions for information in posting vacancies in addition to the state jobs website and the major newspapers in Oregon. I have worked for the board for 19 wonderful years as the administrative assistant. I am honored to serve the state in this interim capacity and feel very proud to work for a board that truly protects the public and serves the licensees and applicants well. Today, I will do my very best to present information to you to the best of my ability and knowledge and apologize in advance if my inexperience in this budget process fails to do so effectively. The board's mission and goals. The board became a licensing agency in 1973 under ORS 675-010. Its mission is to protect the health, safety, and well-being of Oregon citizens by regulating the practice of psychology in a manner that promotes quality care. The board carries out its mission through application educational reviews, examinations, licensing, continuing education, and discipline. The board is a completely other funds agency. The board holds a practice act. This means that if a person is unlicensed and is performing a psychological service, they are in violation of the board's statutes. There are exemptions to the board's statutes. The board has 7 members, 5 licensed psychologists, and 2 public members appointed by the board. The board holds regular board meetings every 6 weeks. The goals of the board are to continue to protect the citizens of Oregon from those who violate the ethical principles through the disciplinary process, to work for efficiencies for better service to the public, to continue to work with the professional associations on a state and national level in order to identify and increase the standards of practice and identify areas of need of regulation. Organization, the board is a policy-setting consumer protection agency. It is staffed by 2.5 FTE, 1 full-time executive director, a full-time program representative, and a half-time investigator. No new positions are being requested. Program summary and services. The Board of Psychologist Examiners is considered one program created for the purpose of consumer protection and regulation of psychologists and psychologist associates through licensure. Services are delivered to the general public, applicants for licensure, licensees, and other state agencies. The board has 5 components of its program: applications, examinations, licensing, continuing education, and consumer protection. Services are delivered to applicants through application processing and educational and work experience reviews. 60 to 80 applications are processed each year. Once these requirements are met, applicants qualify for the written and or oral examination. Approximately 90 oral examinations are taken each year. Licensing is conducted annually to approximately 1,100 licensees from November to January. The review of continuing education reports is part of the licensing renewal requirements. Continuing education is reported every 2 years on an odd-even license number structure. Licensees cannot renew their licenses until they have satisfactorily completed 50 hours of acceptable continuing education. 550 reports are reviewed each year. Consumer protection is the most important activity that the board performs to carry out its mission. Complaint statistics are presented to the subcommittee as attachment number 2. The board's half-time investigator investigates approximately 60 complaints per year. The investigator investigates all complaints received and reports the findings to the board in a written report for its review. Upon the board's evaluation, it decides whether to dismiss the complaint, gather more information, or issue a proposed sanction. To date, there are about 47 open files. 43 are under investigation, 2 are in the contested case process, and 1 is at the Court of Appeals. Performance measurements. There was a statement of expectation from the last session that the board was directed to more thoroughly develop and track performance measurements during the 2001-2000 biennium. As directed, the board has identified 8 measures outlined in Attachment 1. These performance measurements outline and explain how the board will implement the statement of expectation as a budget note from the last session. As a very small agency with a continual growth of licensees, applicants, and investigation requests, creating more efficiency within the program has always been challenging, but a necessary vehicle to meet the agency's many deadlines. Although most of the performance measurements are yet to be implemented, it will give the agency the needed data to continuously improve operations, efficiencies, and services in target weak areas. The former executive director was in the process of creating measurement tools to finalize the performance measurements before her resignation, effective December 13, 2002. Unfortunately, this project has not been completed. Current board staff was able to complete the project to the best of its abilities in light of the staff shortage and is included as Attachment 1 to this document. Staff will begin gathering data for 2003 by conducting surveys relating to the key measures. The planned activities will also give the next executive director a starting point to further develop the performance measurements in the coming years. Major program changes. These were bills that I don't want to bore you with all the details, but they have considerably changed the way we operate the agency, so I'd just like to briefly go through the legislative changes and the administrative rule changes. In 1997, a legislative change to the oral examination process allowed candidates to only retake the exam in the area in which they failed, not to the entire examination. It created a review and appeal process and an avenue for candidates to obtain a copy of the record. In 1999, it's probably the most significant change in the board's program, the Psychologist Practice Act. The Board of Psychologist Examiners sponsored a bill that modified the definition of the practice of psychology. The bill simply replaced the word and with the word or, and ORS 675-010 now defines the practice of psychology as rendering or offer to render supervision, consultation, evaluation, or therapy services to individuals, groups, or organizations for the purpose of diagnosing or treating behavioral, emotional, or mental disorders. Seemingly small, the change eliminated a loophole that allowed unlicensed people to offer mental health services where they were either diagnosing or treating. The board believes that unless practitioners fall under one of the specific exceptions outlined in ORS 675-090, it is unlawful to engage in a mental health activity without being licensed by the board as a psychologist or psychologist associate. In 2000, the oral examination process was completely revamped to reflect the recommendations made by the American Association of State and Provincial Psychology Boards oral examination guidelines as a model for its oral examination. In 2001, administrative rule changes streamlined the application and examination processes for applicants, making the process easier and faster. Graduates from APA schools' files were reviewed by board staff, thereby eliminating the wait for a board meeting to become eligible and move on to the examination process. This new process enables graduates to get into the professional field faster. The board also adopted the Association of State and Provincial Psychology Boards Certificate of Professional Qualifications, allowing psychologists who hold this certificate a method of mobility to transition from their home state to Oregon by having their national file transferred and taking an Oregon oral examination on only the laws and ethics. The board revised its rules regarding the procedures to administer the national written examination via a computer-administered version, thereby eliminating the paper and pencil test, which was proctored by board staff twice a year in Salem. Candidates can schedule taking the examination at their convenience rather than waiting 6 months to take the examination. Performance and workload. Through the use of computers and updated technology, this has provided the board with the ability to respond to requests quickly. Turnaround time for issuing licenses, follow-up to board actions, and processing documents and entering data have increased significantly as we continue to upgrade and add to the database while streamlining internal procedures. The agency uses a customized and very efficient database, which enables staff to generate reports and provide fast turnaround time, which is the major key to the efficiency of the agency staff. The database is continuously maintained and added to in order to meet the current and newly created requirements of the agency. Cost controls. The agency is co-located with other boards. It has proven to be extremely cost-effective. Sharing equipment and other services, such as copiers and fax, assists the agency in keeping expenses down. Co-locating also allows the staff to network with other staff persons as an information source. Most importantly, in 1999, the board launched a website that contains the majority of its paper forms, including application packets, investigation forms, administrative rules, general information, and continuing education reporting forms by use by the general public, applicants, and licensees. This not only saves staff time in processing requests, it also saves money in reproduction and mailing costs. Most general questions can be answered by accessing the website and saves valuable staff time. Information technology systems. The Internet allows board staff to access information quickly from other state agencies and to gather information from websites while conducting research. Through the use of email to communicate with board members, licensees, applicants, and consumers, not only saves valuable time for everyone, but it also creates a record of communication and saves resources. The board has one system with three computer stations networked together. Professional service contracts are reviewed and renewed, if necessary, at the end of the biennium. Affirmative action statement. It is the policy of the board to comply with all aspects of the governor's affirmative action directives as set forth in ORS 659-025-659-027. Currently, the board is staffed by one Caucasian woman, one Caucasian man, and one vacancy, the executive director. Please refer to attachment number 3, diversity information. Revenue sources that support program costs and any proposed changes in fees and or changes affecting the particular program. The board is totally other funds supported from licensing, application, and examination fees and other miscellaneous sources, including civil penalties and the sales of publications. There are no proposed changes in fees. The board had a fee increase in the last biennium and believes that it can continue current service levels for the next biennium without a further increase in fees. Program growth or reduction, including the historical context for the growth reduction. Being a regulatory agency, program growth is based on the number of licensees. This number appears to be growing slowly. Factors that drive program costs. The primary components of the agency's costs are labor, consulting, and attorney general fees, and occupancy costs. Labor and attorney general costs have increased over the years. Personnel has remained at 2.5 FTE for the last two biennium. The number of applicants and licensees have grown over that period of time without increasing the number of personnel performing the services, and the agency has remained in the same physical space. The impact of a contested case that was remanded and reversed by the Court of Appeals has added to agency costs to pay for outside experts to evaluate each case by an expert reviewer that is likely to result in substantive discipline. To date, the expert reviewer program has cost $4,983. Expert reviewers have reviewed 7 cases. The board currently has a backlog of complaint cases, and as it develops its future plans, is looking into the possibility of contracting additional investigative services to reduce the backlog. Accomplishments with funding provided for this program in the last legislative session. The agency was able to operate without cutting services to the general public, applicants, and licensees. Most investigations were conducted in a timely manner, and the assistance of the AG was obtained whenever necessary. I'm sorry. I need.
You're doing really well.
You're doing great.
Rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think I'm done.
That was actually one of the better, more comprehensive presentations this committee has seen. Questions or comments for Ms. Mann from the members of the committee? Representative Marsh.
Thank you. I'll follow up on the question. I know you stated that the board was considering contracting out some investigative services. And the backlog troubles me, as does the time factor. I noticed that approximately 60% are completed within 6 months. And none of these budgets should be taken in a vacuum, because at the same time, you've got a backlog, and the it takes a long time to satisfy complaints. We're also hearing a bill to expand the scope a practice to include prescription drugs in a limited sense, and those things are kind of coming at me in two different ways that I get a little nervous about. Is there sufficient funds, or are there sufficient funds in the budget currently to expand contracting out? Do you know?
Madam Chair, Representative March, we believe that we do have adequate funding to contract some of these services out in this biennium.
Madam Chair and Representative March, the board had quite a bit budgeted in the Attorney General line item in their budget, which inflates at a particularly high rate. When we went through the budget process, typically if the agency doesn't use their Attorney General to the degree that's budgeted, we cut that category because of its inflationary amount. But instead of doing that with this agency, I transferred money from the Attorney General account to professional services, so we get rid of the very high inflation over the years. That would compound quite a bit. But the agency does have a little bit extra cushion in there in the professional services to try and relieve this backlog.
Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was Senator. Doctor, I'm going to ask you a question about a bit of policy, but it relates directly to your potential budget. We're looking at the potential for dramatically changing what psychologists do in the state by bringing forth an ability to write limited prescriptions. New Mexico's already done that, I understand. And there's a limited program inside the federal government that's been successful. The oversight necessary from a board in that would be significantly different than what you're doing now, if that were allowed. Has the board taken a position, and has the board had an opportunity to think about what it would have to do in order to take on the further responsibility of supervising physicians, or I should say doctors, I guess, who would be actually writing prescriptions for patients?
Madam Chairman, Representative Gates, the board does not have an official position at this point. We've been reviewing the educational requirements and the training requirements of the legislation that and the proposed prescriptive capabilities of psychologists. Basically, the board's position is that if the legislature passes this legislation, that we will create rules to monitor this, but at this point it doesn't have a position relative to whether it supports it or doesn't. We will review this again in our 28th of this month meeting.
Follow up, Madam Chair. And in that discussion, would you make part of that discussion not just rules, but what the burden would be on the board within probably a year to 2 years as far as supervising that was concerned?
That's part of the consideration, is to think about what the board would need to do in order to provide that level of supervision and to gain the expertise in order to do that. I mean, at this point, the board does not have the expertise sitting on the board to do that. It would need to change the composition of the board to meet those new demands.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate the thoroughness of your testimony. I do have a question that goes to information that's been prepared by our legislative fiscal office analyst. And there's an indication that there is pending legislation, Senate Bill 214, that would grant semi-independence to the board and remove the board from the state budget system, which would significantly reduce oversight by the executive branch and legislature. Can you tell us who are the sponsors of the legislation? And then also, what is the rationale for this, what would be a major shift in policy and oversight?
You want me to go first with the part? Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Gordon, I know part of this. The bill was sponsored originally by the governor, and it was put out, not built into the budget, not necessarily advocated for, but requested by the agency with the notion that the governor could come back at a later date and either oppose or recommend the bill. It was put out by the board, I believe, by the previous director with the board's approval, and the board could probably talk to the reasons behind their seeking that a little better than myself.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the purpose, to my knowledge, of the executive director asking for the semi-independent status to go through is to save economic and personal resources for the board by eliminating the need to follow time-consuming budget approval procedures structured primarily for larger state agencies. The board believes that it would save $31,918 in central government service charges by accomplishing those functions in-house. And that was the intent.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. I hear what you're saying, but I would have to say that I am very concerned that this is legislation that would also accomplish removing oversight by the executive branch and the legislature. And I think, given some of the given the backlog and given the need to protect the public from those in the profession who might be doing harm, it just doesn't seem that this is an appropriate direction to be going in. So I really question that, and I believe you said, Mr. Torgerson, this is coming out of the governor's office.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, initially the agency requests a legislative concept, and the governor approved it in the sense that he let it go forward, but it wasn't built into the governor's budget. It's not recommended in the governor's budget at this time.
Okay. Well, again, Madam Chair, just very concerned that this concept is here, and I hope that it doesn't go forward.
But I share your concern, Senator Gordley, especially in view of the situation with the turnover in directors that the agencies have. Senator Messervy?
Thank you, ma'am. First, I'd like to follow up on Senator Gordley's comments. I think any agency that is dealing with public safety such as this needs to think very carefully about the credibility with the public and the tie into government on the oversight that the governor's office and the legislature provides. I would think would be good for the profession, quite frankly. I'm very interested, however, if there's ways that we could improve the process to reduce the cost to some of these smaller agencies. Sense that as we've been going through all of our licensing boards here the last couple of weeks that we're requiring an awful lot of information. I think I spoke to this at one point, matter of fact, and I'm worried that we're not becoming such a burden that it's difficult for you to conduct your business. But the information is valuable, and I think maybe once we get through the first cycle and we all and they all understand what the process is, that hopefully it'll be much easier. Having said that, the questions I have, first of all, and you might have said this, and it was a very good presentation, but I didn't pick up on it, the number of total licenses you deal with in your agency per year?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, we have about 1,100 licensed psychologists and psychologist associates.
Okay. And then you also, I believe in our document, said 150 applications. I would assume that's new. And then, so the 1,100 also accounts for the inactive licenses as well? Do you think so? Okay.
And if you don't have the answers, we would be very happy to have you research the issues and get back to us when you have the information.
Okay. Madam Chair, another question?
Yes.
Has there been any discussion, and maybe this is a question for Adam as well, particularly with the new legislation that's coming forth, of combining this board with psychiatrist and a psychologist into one board? Because it would seem to me that you're dealing with more similar situations if you're getting into the prescription business as well. And might be some efficiencies there.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, to this point there hasn't been a significant discussion about combining the boards. I know that there's a piece of legislation out there that would ask the Health Licensing Office to look into the possibly combining with the Board of Nursing, and Mr. Olson from Legislative Fiscal had spoke about perhaps expanding that to include a study of if there's a better way to accomplish the licensing function, but nothing at this point.
Thank you.
Hey, I noticed that you have a Secretary of State's change of audit report from the middle of September of 2001, and I believe that I heard you say that you had another director resign just a very short time ago. Can you, Ms. Mann and Dr. Walker, talk to us about the give us some history here about how long directors have stayed in the job, and if there are some recurring reasons why you're having this degree of turnover in your management?
Well, why don't you give the history, and then okay. I can sort of comment on why things are happening.
Madam Chair, our last director, who just retired in December, was there for about 2.5 years. Prior to her, we had another director that was there for exactly 2 years. Prior to this one, it was about 19 years. So it's just the last two that we went through quickly. Since I've been there 19 years ago in 1983, there have been three. So I don't think in 19 years that's a huge turnover. But it just seems to be in the last 4 years that we've went through the highest turnover.
What were the issues surrounding the last two directors deciding to move on?
I believe Dr. Wacker would have that information.
Madam Chair, I think that probably the board had the luxury of having basically an executive director who was... who essentially started with the agency and grew up with the agency and matured with the agency. And when she retired, then, of course, the board was left with trying to deal with a number of changes that were occurring, including the Practice Act and a number of other things, and in relationship to meeting the demands of a different examination process, trying to make the whole complaint process more efficient, these kinds of issues, we began to look for who would be an appropriate candidate to do that. And I think that we had been persuaded to try to have someone who had more legal kind of background that would help us structure for the future. I think that we've come now more to the conclusion that we probably need to have somebody that is has more state government as well as more board kind of related activity experience in order to create some stability for the organization. So it's had something to do with the board's maturity in terms of looking at what kind of an agency director would be useful.
Can you talk to us about where you are in the process of selecting another director?
I think that, again, this is a topic that will be taken up in the February meeting. And we are just, you know, at this point have made the transition of appointing Ms. Mann as the acting director and trying to stabilize the functions of the board so that we can continue to maintain the renewal process, the applications and licensing, and continue the applications, as well as sort of moving on with the complaint process. So this will be taken up in this meeting, and I think that we're looking at a new job description, and we're looking at what kind of recruiting that we will do and who will be involved in the selection process.
It does sound to me that you're going through a kind of an evolution in your job description process, and I'm wondering if the board has considered getting some people that are skilled in guiding that process to come in and help you through that. Has any discussion in that area taken place?
Yeah, I think that we certainly, you know, that's been a part of the discussion to do that, and, you know, we certainly, you know, look to desk to sort of help us with that.
Representative Bates.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you give me an idea of the size of the backlog and the aging of the backlog complaints? I mean, you have just a few there you were concerned about, or is it a big number that's kind of sort of piling up while you're going through this transition?
Yeah, those numbers. I thought that I brought the complaint index log, but I didn't bring that log. That's the big one. I don't have the index.
It's okay. You're doing fine. If you can give it to us later, that's fine.
Further questions?
We'll certainly get that information to you.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One last question. There's about 500 psychologists in the state right now, or somewhere around that number. I may be wrong about that. Is the number going up or going down? We're having more and more difficulty meeting the needs of the citizens of the state as far as mental health treatment is concerned.
And actually, the numbers are going up.
Okay. What's the number? Are they coming in?
Well, currently we have 1,100 licensees in the state. You know, a portion of those, of course, are in academic settings, and a portion of those are in practice. A portion of those are in public agencies. We get approximately 150 new applicants a year, and I don't know what the retirement. Do you know how many retire? How many? Again, we can get those numbers to you.
Further questions or comments? There is, as Dr. Bates has noted, a bill out there to expand the ability of the people that are licensed by the examiners to prescribe limited prescriptions. I have extreme concern with that bill and with the bill that Senator Gordley's brought forward to give the board an additional degree of autonomy given the instability of your situation. And I would have great misgivings about adding a prescription aspect to what the people that you license can do, given that you don't have anybody that's running the boat right now to try to figure out how to get on top of tracking whether that's being successful or any of those kinds of things. I'm wondering if the committee would be interested in finding out where these two bills are in the system and communicating to whoever's holding them that we have concerns in these areas.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. If I may say again, it's not just the instability of the board and the transition that they're going through, and I say that also recognizing that there are a lot of, no doubt, good and talented, wonderful people working with the board and with this agency. But there is instability, and when you couple that with the instability in our overall mental health system, a mental health system which is being dismantled, this is very troublesome. So we really do need to intervene and, frankly, put a halt to the bill moving forward. Certainly hear the bill, but the policy intended in the bill contradicts where we are now.
Which bill?
514, Senate Bill 514.
Senator Mazzardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At least for my benefit, maybe for the rest of the committee, too. It would be interesting for me to have a breakdown of exactly what the authority and the responsibilities are for the psychologist and the psychiatrist. If there is a movement for them to have responsibilities that are closer together, it would be good to, for us to at least have a basic understanding of what is the difference in the two different fields. I know they're very closely related. But
Dr. Walker, can you provide any insight on that issue?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, basically, you know, you're really talking about the structure of two different kinds of professional activities in some ways. And while we're talking about limited prescriptive ability for psychologists in one sense, they're really not practicing medicine in another. So you're really not only just talking about those groups, you're also talking about psychiatric nurse practitioners who have prescriptive, currently prescriptive capacity. And I don't necessarily perceive them as practicing medicine either. But, you know, psychiatrists by and large, you know, deal more exclusively with very, you know, complex cases and, you know, the ones that could be more complicated medically and really are associated with a larger medical community. And the mental health community is not associated with a larger medical community in that sense. So I think that you have a lot of schoolist sort of territorial issues and political issues to sort of overcome to really deal with that. And I don't think that anyone is particularly interested at this point in trying to tackle that.
Madam Chair, I appreciate those remarks. If Adam or someone could break that down to what their legal authorities are and what their response, I still think would be helpful.
Mr. Torgerson, you want to take that one on?
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, sure.
And if I could follow up, Madam Chair, I'm quite concerned about with the new drugs that we have on the markets today and some of the things we're hearing and reading about, at least, of the impacts and how they relate with other types of medications. I think it's something that the industry, as well as we that are providing the oversight, need to watch very closely. Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, ma'am. Chair, I'm going to try to weigh in here a little bit about this because in my other life I'm in the middle of this all the time, and so I'll try to give some insights to all of us and possibly to myself too as I go along, and feel free to correct me if I mistake. Psychologists and psychiatrists have a huge overlap in what they do. They may not like to admit that, but they do. If you draw two circles and overlap, then they probably have 50-70% overlap. The key difference from a practitioner's point of view is that a psychiatrist is a MD or DO who has medical training and background, but who specializes in mental health and writes prescriptions. Some of those are very powerful drugs. And a psychologist primarily relies on counseling and analysis to achieve what they're trying to achieve. A little third circle in the bottom that crosses over. In this state, we have nurse practitioners who have pretty broad ability to write prescriptions, and some of them have specialized in the psychiatric field. And they're writing prescriptions very similar to what the psychiatrists write. And so you have that interplay of those three. Lay a fourth circle over the top of it, you get to primary care physicians, which probably primary care physicians write somewhere around 70 or 80% of all the psychotropic drugs in the state, simply because of the number of people out there who need this medication and the shortage of psychiatrists and nurse practitioners who can do that also. So the vast majority of these drugs are really being written by primary care physicians. One of the reasons that's happened is because the new drugs that came out, starting with Prozac and some others that we've already the name of, are incredibly safe drugs, have very little interaction with the drugs. And the chances of any significant harm to a patient, even with massive overdoses, is minimal. However, there are other classes of psychiatric drugs that are incredibly dangerous, and even given in small amounts can cause serious trouble and have huge interactions with the drugs. And that's what Senator Messerly's talking about. It's a very real thing. So having said all that, and knowing that we have this sort of overlaying situation, and an incredible shortage of, as far as treatment is concerned, as we dismantle our mental health care system in the state due to budget shortfalls, I think there is an opportunity here for psychiatrists to step up and be an integral part of that system in a bigger way than they've been before, with very tight limitations, collaborative relationship with psychiatrists, nurse practitioners, and primary care physicians. I would tell you that probably once a week, or maybe even twice a week, I get a call from a psychologist who says, I've got this patient here who's deeply depressed that I'm dealing with. Would you please write some Prozac or Zoloft or Effexor? And they actually know what drug they're suggesting. They know the drug well, and they know the dosage. We talk it over, and I often, more times than not, have the patient come in and we write the prescription. So that kind of collaboration is already going on. It would be much faster and easier if it was done under a little different venue where they had some privileges. My suggestion would be, and I don't want to get things thrown at me from the back of the room or anywhere else around here, is that I think there's an opportunity here. I think the opportunity needs to be looked at a little differently. I would strongly suggest that an interim task force be set up with the equal number of psychologists, psychiatrists, primary care, pharmacists on board, sit down, put together a program that you think might really work, that would protect the public, but give value to the public, that would keep all parties happy in this with proper collaborative work going on. The goal of that group being that, in fact, some psychologists would have an opportunity to write prescriptions, because I think that's a plus for the state and a plus for our patients. But that's been done carefully. I think rushing through it in a session like we're having now is really not appropriate. It kind of scares me a little bit. But I would be very strongly supportive of that kind of a task force being set up by a bill and going forward in the interim and coming back with a collaborative bill that all parties agree to at the beginning of the next session. And the board would have to be a part of that decision. Is that enough?
Comments. Further comments or questions from the committee? Dr. Walker, I didn't give you a chance to make a presentation. Do you have any statements or anything that you'd like to say to us?
Oh, Madam Chair, I really don't have any presentation to make. I certainly appreciate the remarks of Representative Bates, and I would echo, you know, his summary as well as, you know, his sentiments in the sense that that it would be nice to be able to create a structure that certainly would provide new services, easier access to the citizens of Oregon for certain services.
Mr. Torgerson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, Adam Torgerson, Department of Administrative Services. I'm going to go through the short budget presentation that we go through with the spiral bound on the left side, starting at the second page, which shows the historical context for the board's budget. I'd also like to note that the board's budget is going up by just under 10% from the legislatively approved budget through the fifth special session, and that the board has absorbed the cost of a special committee to go over expert review committee, I'm sorry, to go over cases, and this was required judicially, so the board had no control over it and has absorbed that within their operating budget. The budget wasn't reduced at all during the special sessions. It is a single program unit, entirely other funded. The fee decrease, I can speak to a little bit as I understand it. During the last legislative session, the board had come in with a fee increase, and that increase was approved. The board had also asked for, I believe it was a half-time position to assist in investigations with it. And the committee didn't feel that was appropriate, so that the committee gave the board the fee increase and asked them to temporarily lower it, which is what they've done. The budget shifts money from Attorney General to Professional Services to help fund this additional committee, as well as trying to get rid of any backlog in investigations that the board has. The board is about 50-50 in personal services and services and supplies, the reason being their shift to professional services and having a lot of professional services and Attorney General in lieu of personnel in their budget. The board didn't have any special session budget adjustments. The inflation package is standard with the exception of shifting $30,000 from Attorney General to Professional Services. The fee and revenue changes, the board had in the interim temporarily lowered their renewal fees from $275 to $255 in accordance with legislative direction, and they don't have any new programs or governor investments.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Mr. Torgerson, there's a reference to Cochran versus the Board of Psychologist Examiners on page 3.
Yes, ma'am.
Continues current program levels, continuing advisory committee necessitated by Cochran versus the Board of Examiners. What was that case about?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if any of the board folks with me have a greater expertise than I do, but I understand the substance of the decision was that there needs to be a further review for disciplinary cases, and perhaps the doctor could speak a little bit better.
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, basically, the Cochran decision attempted to bifurcate the board's role in relationship to complaints. The issue is that the Court of Appeals did not believe that the board could act as an expert in its own case and also adjudicate the case. And so basically that decision suggested that one of the things that the court wanted was to have additional expert testimony for these case complaints.
That's helpful.
Further questions for Mr. Torgerson? Senator Gordon, you look like you didn't get everything you needed there.
I would like to have some more background on the history of what prompted the case. Some more background on the history would be helpful. And the role and function of the advisory committee. Thank you.
Representative Bates.
To follow up on that, I'd like to know also some information, Madam Chair. Did the appeal court reverse the board's findings?
Yes.
And follow-up question?
Yes.
Was that based on their concerns that expert testimony from outside source was not obtained?
That's correct.
Is it permissible to ask what the nature of that case was and when the case occurred?
The Cochran case was a forensic evaluation in which the board determined that Dr. Cochran had not used his interpretations were not sufficient to support the claims that he made vis-a-vis the evaluation. And so disciplinary action was done. This case started was really a long time ago. Do you recall when it was started?
I believe it was 1992.
Yeah, so this started in 1992, and the complaint process evolved over a long period of time. I certainly would be happy to get you a copy of the decision, if you want.
Madam Chair, I'm sharing good senators, I think, position of how well the board is functioning.
Uh-huh.
To have a case appealed is unusual for most boards. To lose that appeal is even more unusual. And I feel concerned about...
Basically, that sent shockwaves through the board as well, and that was one of the reasons that we took as aggressive a stand as we did in terms of obtaining outside, expert testimony as we've gone along now. I mean, the board basically makes an initial determination and feels fairly strongly about when we go to initiate a sanction on a licensee, that the board feels pretty secure about its decision. And so it's been good for us to get outside you know, expert testimony on this, and it's not a process that the board necessarily feels bad about, but it's we were all quite negatively affected by that experience, I'll tell you that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Madam Chair, I'm hearing that the Cochran case involved a forensic evaluation,
right,
suggesting that the evaluation was conducted on someone in custody.
No, it was, I think, was, I can't remember if it was a custody. You remember? What? That's right. It was, Cochran testified, I think, on as to the mental competency of an individual in a murder trial. And I think that those were, that was the substance of that case.
All right. Thank you.
You have good.
Mr. Torgerson, had you completed your comments?
Yes, ma'am. I can add something on the case, though, just for the record. Just
if you would.
Reviewing the case, it was highly unusual. And when looking at the court decision, it didn't mention any malfeasance on the board's part. It was an unusual procedural step that that this case required that, no, to my knowledge, not very many other boards have anything like this in place. So it wasn't anything the board could foresee.
Thank you, Mr. Torgerson. Are there additional questions or comments for the panel?
Chair?
Yes, Senator Mezzoli.
Thank you. I just remembered I was going to ask a question. Maybe you covered this while I was out. But it seems to be a fairly high number of misrepresentation or unlicensed complaints. How are you dealing with that?
Madam Chair, Senator Mezzoli, basically, since the practice that, you know, originally the psychologist operated under a title act, and then the Practice Act changed basically the rules of the game substantially in terms of, as a regulatory body, what fell under the purview of this board's investigation. And so we're now looking at complaints that are come from phone books. You know, we had a complaint more recently where someone was doing behavioral interventions around encopresis or soiling and calling themselves poop busters. And these are the kinds of things that become sort of now the practice of psychology. So the board has become fairly conscientious in looking at all these claims that are made, and basically send out mostly cease and desist letters at this point. And we now have and offer civil penalties. In the situation where someone just stops the activity, or then we don't pursue it. In situations where we then follow up, and the person is persisting in the activity and the unlicensed practice of psychology, then we have instituted civil penalties, and that's been an increasing thing over the last year.
Well, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you track that, and can you track that across state lines? Is that going on
in terms of the internet?
Of complaints of any issue, I guess, but particularly if they're operating without a license.
I'm sorry, Senator, I don't understand the question.
How do you track within the state if someone has a pattern of coming back and operating again without a license, and particularly if they move to another state, does that record of a complaint or even maybe a finding of fact, does that follow them? Is there a record that follows their profession?
As far as I know, it doesn't. And in terms of the way we follow up in this state, is that we just follow up the original allegations of the complaint. So if someone has posted something on a website, or they're operating in a community in which they're providing flyers or information or advertising in some way, those are the only ways that we can continue to track whether they're doing that activity. If they go underground and we have no way of understanding what they're doing, then we don't see that.
One more follow-up, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
So let me stick this back and see if I understood what you just said. Even in Oregon, we don't keep a track record of if they have several complaints over the life of their profession, whether they've had more or repeated.
See, part of the difficulty really has to do with that the people that are practicing as unlicensed individuals fall under no regulatory body. I mean, they're just you know, people out there doing an activity, and they're neither professional counselors, they're licensed social workers, they don't fall under the aegis of any regulatory group or professional organization. So there's no way of sanctioning them, or no way of recording. Other than we could put it on a website, I suppose we could say these individuals have been reprimanded for unlicensed practice of psychology. I couldn't think of any other way to advertise that information.
One more, sure.
Yes.
What is the most severe penalty if someone is documented that they are operating without a license?
I mean, typically we've been fining these individuals $1,000.
So, and it is required to if you're practicing psychology, to have a license.
That's correct.
And I'm sure just a comment, that seems rather low, particularly if there's repeated offenses.
Just want to pursue a couple of things with the panel. There was an earlier question about the number of complaints by type, and I believe that was the question. And we do have in attachment one, which is the report on performance measures, a grid on the next to the last page in the document that reveals formal disciplinary actions taken by the board, and then also the number of complaints by type starting back in 1998 and through 2002. If members of the committee would like to take a look at that page. Also, in your beginning testimony, Ms. Mann, you made some references to the board's approach to performance measures, and I'd just like to draw the committee's attention to another page, which is in our binders, in the agency summary section. It's page 6. And it's titled Performance Measures Review Final. The reviewer was Jeff Tryons of the Oregon Progress Board. And I'm wondering if Ms. Mann and Dr. Wachter would have any comments on the findings on this particular page, which is, again, page 6 under agency summary. And this binder.
Yes. Senator Gordley. Page 6, under the criteria for the budget development, or C9D?
This
under the
C9D.
Okay, thank you.
It seems to me that this review evaluates the performance measures that you have arrived at, and I'm giving you the opportunity to comment on this evaluation if you would like to do so on the record in a way that might help us better understand how you intend to move forward with your performance measures.
Senator Gordley? Attachment number one in the handouts that I gave the committee this morning reflects how it goes into more detail about these performance measurements than what was in the binder. Under each key performance measurement, in parentheses and in italics, is how we're going to accomplish each one of the performance measurements by sending out basically surveys and doing web counts and the number of the complaints dismissed. That's how we intend on measuring these.
Let me clarify what I'm suggesting we focus on, and I appreciate your trying to respond to my muddled approach here. But again, looking at page 6, if you look at item 2, it indicates that the board's measures are few in number. 5 of the measures could be clarified or otherwise improved to make them better measures of performance. So what I'm trying to get at is, in your moving forward with your performance measures, are you addressing the issues that have been raised in this review of your performance measures?
Senator Gordley, I would hope that we are moving forward to better address these. I believe that this is an assignment that the next director is going to have to look at. This was the best that we could do to complete this project by the January deadline to get this done, because this was not completed by the former director, and we just kind of picked up the pieces after she left to get this together for the DAS review in January. Apparently we bumbled, and this next director can pick up on these and either go with what we have presented here or take the final recommendation and improve these performance measurements and make them stronger.
Senator Gordley, I would also suggest that, you know, the board has not been overly aware of these objectives.
Oh.
Okay? And I can say that I feel some acuteness about all this as a consequence of our presentation here today and getting prepared for this. And we certainly, this is an area that the board needs to keep track of better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not done so.
I appreciate the response. And I think one of the opportunities we have this morning is to help, to assist you mm-hmm. in providing some guidance and direction as you move forward. So again, the responses are appreciated. Are there further questions or comments? Senator, Representative Bates.
Thank you. I just want to thank both of you for coming up here. I know it's been a difficult time. And Ms. Mann, I appreciate your efforts today.
Yes.
I know this is not something you expected to be doing, and you did a good job. You did an exemplary job.
Absolutely.
And, Doctor, I know it's hard to take time away from your personal life and your job to come up here also, and I appreciate you coming up and helping us. And hopefully this has been something that will be good for the board and good for the state of Oregon, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. With those words, if there are no other comments, we will close the hearing on House Bill 5047. And the committee will take.